Welcome to the Soulful Insights podcast. Before we begin, if you enjoy this podcast, please consider donating at the coffee link to support my work and to support this podcast. So let's get into it. Today we're going to be talking about the idea that the ego must die in order for you to have a spiritual awakening. So I have a different take on this, which is probably common in almost everything. I definitely run outside the box on just about everything, and I love that about myself. So the idea that the ego must die in order for you to have a spiritual awakening is not entirely correct. What needs to fall away is the cultural, societal, religious ideas that have created separation. My beliefs are right, yours are wrong. Worrying about what other people think about you, judging other people, the idea of they're going to go to hell because they don't believe like you, or all of that kind of stuff. That's what needs to fall away. The selfishness, self-centeredness, being self-conscious, comparing yourself to other people, all that stuff. All the low vibration aspects of the physical plane of existence, which involving kind of that sense of self, right? The solar plexus chakra is where your sense of self is centered. And this sense of self is extremely important for your journey through life in the physical realm. Many in the spiritual community emphasize the truth that we are all interconnected and emphasize the unity of all things, which is an important element of healthy spirituality and the foundation of the morals and values that you have in your life. However, using the idea of unity and the interconnectedness of all things at the expense of your sense of self is not healthy. You will find that many spiritual teachers claim that they've had an ego death, but they also exhibit traits and teachings that are insensitive, disconnected, and aloof. I have witnessed this in so many spiritual teachers and gurus, and for many years, it was what made me shy away from any practice that would cause a spiritual awakening, because I absolutely did not want to show up in the world like that. The traits of ego death in spiritual awakening that I've witnessed in many spiritual teachers and gurus that I find to be toxic, I'm going to kind of detail those for you a little bit and help you understand the difference between like a healthy transcendence of the ego and this idea of ego death. I don't like the idea of death of the ego. I don't love that. I would actually say transcending the ego, okay? So number one thing that I've seen with a lot of spiritual teachers who claim spiritual awakening is victim blaming. And this can come in many forms. Sometimes the basis of this victim blaming stems from their views on the law of attraction or manifesting. Other spiritual teachers, it comes from the idea that you choose everything that happens to you in your life. I want to give you kind of an example of this type of attitude. During a session with a spiritual coach, I was deeply struggling with trauma in my life. I have a lot. And at this stage, I was experiencing a lot of anger. And I was having a lot of anger towards God. And I was saying, you know, I want to believe in a God just so I can be angry about, you know, this traumatic stuff that happened to me. And it was just like, you know, when we're in anger, it's not rational. It just needs to come out. And I was processing my anger. So I'm saying all kinds of just angry things, which is normal and good. But I was told that I didn't have anyone to be angry with except myself because I chose this. I was like, excuse me? How helpful was that? I will tell you, it wasn't at all. In fact, it was hurtful. There's a wild misconception in the spirituality community about what it means to have chosen to come into this realm and the unpredictable nature of living in a physical realm where free will is completely unrestrained. And somehow we knew every choice that every single person was going to make in every moment and every... It just is ridiculous. So I'm going to present you with an alternative view to this idea that individuals who are sex trafficked, raped, brutally abused as children, etc., this idea that they shouldn't have suffering. You shouldn't have pain. You shouldn't have PTSD, You shouldn't even have an emotional response because you chose this. You chose that for yourself before coming here. Apparently, according to a lot of spiritual gurus, there's no such thing as suffering anyway, right? Suffering is a choice. I've heard that a lot. Suffering is a choice. I don't agree with any of this, and I'm going to explain to you why. If your spirituality causes you to deny and ignore the reality of suffering in this plane of existence, if it causes you to blame victims of extreme violence and trauma and to ignore their suffering, what you have is not spirituality at all. What you have is willful disregard for anyone but yourself. That is not a transcendence of the ego. That is not even an ego death. That is ego at its best. You don't have a right to suffer. Suffering is your fault. Your suffering is a choice. You're telling me that that's not ego? Interesting. So let's get into what it means to agree to come into this physical plane of existence. What it means to know what we will experience and how that absolutely does not mean we chose everything or even knew what our experience here was going to be like. And why do I say that? First thing I want to say is this. There are millions of choices that could be made at any given moment in the world. And we all have complete and utter free will, unrestrained. You can choose to do literally anything. Yes, we have laws and all of that. But reality, if you want to do something, you have that choice available to you. There is no deity or anything that's going to stop you. Okay? Because of absolute free will, there's no way that we would know every single choice in every single situation. We are looking at so many factors at play. When we chose to come, yes, there were things that we knew. We probably knew the parents that we were going to come to. We probably knew the siblings that we were going to have. That was going to be a fixed situation. This is the family that you're going to be born into. So there were certain experiences, but then again, your parents could have chosen many different things throughout your life. You know, when your dad got really angry and smacked you, he could have made a different choice. Do you see what I'm saying? Like, there are so many choices available at any given time. You weren't like, oh, okay, I know that everything that ever happened, I knew was going to happen. No, you didn't. There are key things. There are key pinpoints throughout your life that were there. Now, can we say you knew everything or that you didn't? No, we don't know exactly. Some people that have had near-death experiences have said they knew things, whatever that may or may not be true, I don't know. But because of free will, your choice to come into this world, in my opinion, was less about knowing every single abuse and every single situation that you would ever experience, and more about the agreement of knowing this world is unpredictable. There are going to be some key experiences that you're going to have along the way, but there's also going to be a lot of variability. This is unpredictable. We cannot tell you everything that you're going to experience because it depends on the choices of all the people involved. And so there was a level of the unknown. And I think that was part of why this existence is so difficult. So do I believe that you knew everything that was going to happen to you and you chose that? Like, oh, I want to learn from this and that and the other. No, I don't at all believe that you chose all of the trauma that happened to you. I don't. Did you know of some of it? Maybe. Maybe, but maybe you didn't. Okay? I don't think that we knew everything. I think that there's a lot of choices involved in that and a lot of free will that we just accepted the unknown in a lot of it, okay? But I'm going to use an example. Let's say that there is something that you knew. Let's say you came into a family where there was a lot of abuse, okay? So you did know what family you were going to come into. We did know that. That is a fixed marker. So other things in your life, I don't know what's a fixed marker in someone else's life. So I'm going to use your family being abusive, okay? You did know that. But let me give you an example of compassion in regards to that rather than an example of, well, you chose it, so too bad for you. that's a horrible way of looking at this. So I'm going to use the example of me training for a half marathon. Now, I'd never run a day in my life, and I started training in January and ran a half marathon in August. So I was excited to push myself. I was thrilled at the possibility of accomplishing something. And prior to actually having to physically experience the half marathon, I heard stories of shin splints and blisters and physical pain and exhaustion and all of the things that went along with it. I heard of bleeding feet and ingrown toenail. I heard all the gory details of what people experienced. And so logically, my brain is like, yes, I've heard of all this, but it was so minuscule to my excitement over this accomplishment that I was going to do. Did I know the possibilities of pain? Oh, sure. Have I ever experienced shin splints before? No, I've never ran a day in my life. I don't know what that is. Have I had a blister? Sure. Have I ever run on one? No. Have I had physical pain? Yeah, of course I have, a lot, but it just wasn't registering. I hadn't experienced this before, so I didn't really know. And I would equate this with some of the markers in your life that you knew were going to be hard. Whether you chose them or just agreed to it, we don't know that for sure. I don't think we have a way where we can say 100% you chose something. And I think that it's ridiculous to even claim that you do know that for sure for someone else. You don't. Just because someone did a past life regression, just because somebody had a near-death experience, does not mean that that's a blanket experience for all of us and that we all chose something or we all wanted something. It is not fair to do that. You don't know. You were not there. If you were not physically there with that person at that time, you don't have a right to tell them what they chose or what they knew, in my opinion. Okay? But here we are in the situation saying that you knew. I'm not saying that you chose it, but that you knew. So I knew that I was going to do this marathon. I knew there was risk involved, that there could be pain involved. It was going to be hard, but I didn't really fully grasp what that would feel like physically because I'd never experienced it. Same as what a soul is going to see when they are like, oh, sure, yeah, okay, this is going to happen to me. Well, yeah, in theory, you might be like, oh, okay. But when you're actually in the middle of it, it's a little bit different, right? So towards the end of my training, I started having iliotibial band syndrome that was causing pain in my hip and pain on the outside of my knee. I also was experiencing shin splints. And I'm not talking about a little soreness. I am talking about limping in pain, painful to the touch, like big time. I was soaking in ice and all kinds of stuff. I had painful blisters that would burst and tear and bleed. I did not know. I've had blisters before, but I've never ran on bleeding, open, sore blister stuff. This was way different than what I had in my mind prior to experiencing it. I was determined and I kept going. I kept running on those shin splints. I was like, nope, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do it. And the day of the race, at about the halfway point, there was so much inflammation in my legs that I could hardly hobble. I was limping, and I was not sure if I was going to be able to finish. I was in a lot of pain. This was much harder than what I had ever anticipated when it was in theory. Now that I am in the middle of this physically, way different, okay? No matter how much people talked about the pain and told me what it could possibly be like, and of course, not everybody is experiencing iliotibial band syndrome, shin splints, and all the stuff that I was. Some people run it and it's not as dramatic. But in my case, I experienced the things people warned me about. It just doesn't really sink in until you've actually gone through the experience. About the 9-mile mark, I was running at a speedy 11-minute mile. I was limping along, very much limping. At the end of mile 12, I have about a mile left to go. My husband saw me from the finish line, and he saw me stop and put my hands on my knees in defeat. I couldn't go anymore. I had a mile left, and I couldn't do it. The pain was too great. I just couldn't make it that last mile. I was hurting so much. My knees were hurting. My shins were hurting. Everything was hurting. So, did my husband walk up to me and say, yeah, you chose this? Because I did. Did he say, there's no such thing as suffering, it's all in your head? Did he say, if you would just have an ego death, you wouldn't suffer anymore? Or, suffering is optional? Did he say that to me? Absolutely not. None of that is helpful. Stop saying that. Stop telling people this stuff. Spiritual teachers need to stop saying this. This is not, anyone who talks like this has not had a spiritual awakening. They have not, regardless of what they claim. This is how the spiritual community responds to suffering, and it is absolutely inexcusable. Regardless of whether they chose it or not, you don't know you were not there. So you don't have a right to tell them that. There's no positive that can come out of telling someone there's no such thing as suffering. That's suffering. There's no positive benefit that comes out of saying suffering's optional. If somebody said that to me, it would become violent very quickly. Okay, maybe not. But my husband had finished the 5K that morning, and he's watching at the finish line for me. And when he saw me struggling, he ran up to my side and he started to encourage me. You can do this. I know it hurts. I know this is really hard, but you only have 1 mile left. You got this. I believe in you. I will run with you. You know what? He grabbed my hand and he started getting me to move. Even if you have to walk this last mile, even if you just have to walk, let's do this together. I picked up and I started limping, hobbling, kind of jogging along. And he ran that last mile with me. And he encouraged me every step of the way. You got this. I'm with you. My time was not anything remarkable, but I did it. I finished the race. I accomplished my goal. Okay? That is what a spiritually awakened person does. They don't tell you suffering is optional. They don't tell you you chose this. That is all judgment. That is all denial of someone else's experience in life. But when you walk up next to that person and you encourage them and you love them and you walk with them and you get down in those trenches with them, that is a spiritual person. That is what spirituality is. Anything less than that, if someone claims to be spiritually awakened, spiritual guru, and they're not willing to do that with you, they're lying. Life presents us with all kinds of challenges, suffering, pain, setbacks. This is an unpredictable world, and we experience the full range of emotions here. It's a necessary part of this experience. The point of this experience is to learn to have empathy, compassion, and love that causes you to feel connected to both the joy and happiness and rejoicing in the world, but also connected to the suffering in the world. If you ignore and deny suffering and claim to only experience bliss, you are missing the point. Your high level of consciousness, your spiritual awakening, should cause you to be the first one to reach out your hand to the suffering, to encourage them, to love them, to offer compassion, and to walk alongside them and help them all along the way. That is what a true spiritual awakening is, and that's what true spirituality is. Okay, number two, denial of the full range of human emotion. I see this all the time in the spiritual community, people that claim to be spiritually awakened, all of this. This is huge among the spiritual gurus. Suffering is optional, they say. I hear that all the time, and guess what? It is absolutely unequivocally false. Anybody who tells you that doesn't know anything about this existence. We came to this physical plane of existence to learn from the emotions and experiences that cannot be felt or experienced in any other plane of existence, like they are in this realm. This is the only realm that we can experience this wide range of emotions and experiences, the opposite of what we would experience in a heavenly realm. How do you know what true joy is if you've not felt sorrow? How can you truly appreciate peace if you have not known contention or the absence of peace? In order to grow spiritually and reach your soul's potential, your full potential, you had to come and experience the opposite of where you came from and who you truly are as a spiritual being. In order to do that, you came into a physical realm where your experiences would be vastly different from your spiritual home. That's what this is about. Does it mean you can't experience bliss, that you can't transcend the ego and all that? No, it doesn't. Does it mean you can't have a spiritual awakening? No. But in the physical realm, we came here not to experience what we would experience in our heavenly home, in our spiritual home. We came to experience the opposite of that, to spiritually grow and stretch ourselves to reach our full soul potential. To think that suffering is optional is ridiculous. In the physical realm, you have physical appetites that are very difficult to control because you have this physical body. It isn't just your spirit. You've got to learn to transcend the physical and allow your spirit, your soul, your higher self, whatever you want to call that, to actually have control or sovereignty over the physical. That is what we're trying to do, is transcend the physical. But when we first come here, physical appetites are really difficult to control. How many people overeat? How many people drink too much alcohol? How many people eat too much sugar or junk food or have sexual appetites they can't control? Or they disrespect other people with their sexual appetites. We have all kinds of stuff. Or anger, struggling to control their anger. That's part of, it's almost like a child learning to ride a bike. You have this body and you're trying to learn how to navigate and transcend all of that physical nature and mature in the physicality that we have here. It's not about just, oh, I'm blissed out all the time. Okay, it's that this was never the point of becoming here, of coming here. So we have very strong emotions. They're difficult to manage in the physical realm. That's on purpose, because your soul is stretched when you actually have to learn to manage something that's hard. If I don't work a muscle, it doesn't get stronger, it gets weaker. Do you understand that? This is what This is what spiritual growth is about. It's about putting yourself in a difficult situation where you really have to work at managing emotions and managing appetites and managing those things. And that transcending that is where real spiritual power comes from. We also experience cultures and societies and religions that oppress certain groups of people. People decide the color of your skin or your gender or whatever it is, we're going to shun you, or we're going to say that you're beneath us, or slavery, or all of this stuff happens to people. And to deny their experience of, you know, being oppressed in their culture, or their experience of slavery, or their experience of whatever racism or whatever their experience is, to deny that and to say, oh, suffering is optional, or you know, all of that, we are denying the experience of people. Okay, that isn't a spiritually awakened person that is denying these experiences of different people. There's a strong desire for power and control over others in the physical realm. So you have a lot of power plays and wars and a lot of fighting for power. A lot of religions try to exert control over women. Very, very, very common. A lot of people use the name of God in vain, putting God's name on their subjugation of women. And in fact, in years past, they put God's name on racism. That's called using God's name in vain. That's what that is. It isn't making a religious exclamation of God's name. It's using God's name on your evil desire for power and control over other people is what that is. We experience separation and duality consciousness. We don't see the harm we cause to other people as connected to us. The more that we lower our level of consciousness, the more we are affected by that. We think that when we harm other people, it doesn't harm us. It does. We have unrestrained free will here, which can lead to suffering. And a denial of that isn't helping anyone. There is unrestrained free will. There's no deity that's going to stop you from doing anything. And there's a reason for that. When you come into a world like this, suffering's inevitable. It is not optional, as a lot of these spiritual people say. It just isn't. The powerful emotions people feel that are unmanaged, can lead to violence, sexual desires that are out of control, when people are treated like objects to be consumed instead of people to be loved. It can descend into sexual violence, torture, genocide, slavery, abuse, horrors beyond imagination, sex trafficking, and somehow these so-called spiritually awakened gurus say suffering is optional. The denial of the experience of all of these people. We are here to experience the full range of emotions, including sorrow, grief, pain, anxiety, as well as bliss and joy and all the others. But denial of these emotions and the statement that anyone who feels them is simply choosing to feel that way and that they don't have to feel that way is ridiculous beyond belief. Denying the grief of losing a loved one is ridiculous. True unity consciousness compels us to recognize suffering, to feel connected to those who suffer, and to offer our love, compassion, and empathy to those who are suffering, not a denial of their experience, not demanding that they numb themselves to their experience. That is not unity consciousness. I recently saw a spiritual guru who welcomed a little baby into the world, and it's such a beautiful experience when a new little soul comes into the world. But he is also one of those that claim that suffering is optional and that talks about experiencing ego death and all of that, okay? While he's welcoming this beautiful little soul into his life, it brought to my mind the rejection and claims of suffering, like rejection of the idea of suffering and the claim that suffering is optional. Because at this time that he's enjoying this beautiful little baby that just came into the world, my daughter's friend, just a week prior, lost her baby. The placenta detached from the uterus on her due date, and the baby died. This young woman is in her early 20s. This was her first child. She had to deliver a baby that was not alive. And spiritual gurus would tell you that she should not suffer. She should not be attached to anyone or anything. She should just chalk it up to experience. Do you know how many spiritual gurus would just call this an experience and deny the grief and suffering? A lot of these spiritual gurus are men. And if they are women, they're usually not married. They usually don't have children. They usually don't have emotional attachments or connections to anyone. And that is why they can deny this kind of suffering. To tell this woman that she shouldn't grieve, that there's no such thing as suffering, that she chose this, that her suffering is her choice, it does. It brings up anger in my heart, I will tell you. And the reason that it does is not, that anger isn't wrong or bad. That anger is my love and compassion for a woman who is being denied the experience of grief and suffering over the loss of her child. I cannot and will not give in to this delusion that suffering does not exist and that we should disconnect ourselves from grief when something like this happens. If you think oneness and unity consciousness means denying the emotions and experiences of others, you have this all wrong. You have it all wrong. Okay? So let's move on to number 3, the idea of ego death. Like I said, I don't believe in ego death. I do not believe in that. I believe in transcending the ego, but I don't believe in ego death. Because ego death means you lose your sense of self. And there are many spiritual gurus who say you should lose your sense of self. You should become no one and no thing. Wrong. The next item on the agenda to go is your sense of self in your spiritually awakened journey, according to most of these spiritual gurus. When they begin talking about the oneness of all things and unity consciousness, that we're all connected, it sounds great. Unity consciousness, oneness, that sounds good. It is true. Everything is interconnected. You cannot live on a low level of consciousness causing harm to others without harming yourself. You may not fully understand how that works while you're in this physical existence, but you will at some point in your soul's journey. However, when this idea of oneness and interconnectedness is spoken of in the context of ego death, we start to get into really toxic territory if we're not careful. Essentially, an ego death, according to some spiritual gurus, and I'm not placing this on everyone, I'm just telling you there's a lot of this going around, is a loss of your sense of individuality, personality, your sense of self, for many of these spiritual gurus. You become nothing and no one. You're attached to nothing. You care for nothing. You descend into nothingness. Now, I don't know about you, but this does not sound like something that would bring bliss or happiness to anyone. It sounds ridiculous. Some of the greatest experiences of my life have been the result of my connection and relationships with other people. Can relationships hurt? Yeah. When they tell you not to attach to anything, it's essentially because, yeah, relationships can end, they can be harmful, so you're trying to avoid pain by not connecting with others, which is not, that is not a better option. The birth of a baby and the love and connection and attachment you feel for that little soul brings immense joy. Intimacy in marriage or intimacy in a relationship that is the beautiful extension of loving someone so much you can't get close enough to them, that is bliss. It's a beautiful experience that I wouldn't trade for anything. Nor would I want to miss out on those because I have become nothing and no one and I'm not attached to anyone or anything. That sounds like absolute misery, not happiness. And I'm going to tell you, when I was pregnant with my daughter, I had a lot of complications. I had severe amount of blood at 6 weeks of pregnancy. I didn't know how there would still be a baby in there because it felt like cups and cups of blood. Obviously it wasn't, I know, but it felt like that. But I didn't lose her. Then at 18 weeks, I was dilating. I had to have a surgery where a metal wire was woven into my cervix. I was dilated to 3 centimeters at 18 weeks. They didn't think I was going to make it. I was on bed rest. I was on restricted activity. When I woke up from that surgery, I didn't even know if I was still pregnant with her or not because they were telling me the risks that they could break my water. I could go into labor. It could do all kinds of things. I was on restricted activity. I laid on a couch. I was not supposed to even walk around a grocery store or go shopping. I sacrificed everything to bring this little girl into the world. And at 36 weeks, when I was maybe a little more than 4 weeks early, she was born at 4 pounds, 13 ounces, and 16 inches long. Do you know the joy and bliss that comes from loving that little baby that's growing inside of you and doing everything in your power to protect that baby so that she can come safely into this world? Do you think that I want to be nothing and no one? No. I want to love her. I want to feel the bliss after that birth of that baby. I want to be connected to her. I want to love her with all that I am. I am a mother. Damn it, you touch my baby, I will end you. That's mama bear. That is love. I'm not giving up that experience for your nothing and nothingness and detachment from everything. When I experience intimacy in my marriage, and it is intimacy that is driven by the absolute depth of love that I have for my husband that I met when I was 14 years old, when it is intimacy that is driven by the depths of love and connection, I'm not going to trade that bliss for anything. And there is no nothingness and detachment that will come close to that experience. So when you tell me that to becoming nothing and no one and not attached to anything, that is not bliss. And if you think it is, you clearly haven't experienced the bliss that life can be sometimes. Coming from a high-demand religion, I know what it's like to be denied a sense of self. Because I was. And it's not happiness or bliss, I will tell you that. From the time I was 12 years old, I was told that my identity was to be a wife and mother, and I should desire nothing else, or I was selfish. I was expected to marry young. I was told I should not put off marriage or put off having children to get an education. My education should be far beneath my priorities of marriage and children. Marriage was the top priority. Having children should happen as quickly as possible afterwards. It should not be delayed. I was not allowed to drink coffee, green tea, black tea, sweet tea, kombucha, Earl Grey tea. I had to wear specific underwear that resembles what men wear. It is essentially a t-shirt with markings on it under my clothes and white biker shorts at all times unless I was showering or swimming. If it's 105 degrees outside, I have a white t-shirt and white biker shorts underneath my clothes. And if I don't wear them, I am sinning. I am breaking covenants. And I'm not going to go into all the specifics, but I will tell you that in high school, I wanted to go to medical school. I wanted to become a doctor. But I never pursued it because my religious leaders, who I was to sustain and follow their counsel, told me that an education was not a priority. My purpose in life was to be a wife and a mother. And I want to make it very clear that being a wife is not an identity or something to aspire to. It is merely a relationship status. Your relationship status is not who you are, and it does not define you. But in a high-demand religion, it is pushed as an entire identity for you. Being a mother is something that you are, it's something that you do, but it's not an identity either. It is also a relationship status. Being a mother is a part of me. It is a part of me, and I deeply love that. But it's not my identity. It's no different than me saying being a sister is my entire identity. It's not my identity. I am a sister. I love my sister, but that's not my identity. Having your entire identity wrapped up in relationships is dangerous. Marriage doesn't always last. Children grow up and move away. When the children are grown, who are you then? So when you tell me to become nothing and no one and lose my sense of self, I say, hell no. I've been down that road. I know this pain all too well. 43 years old when my kids were grown, and I was left in an empty house with only the qualifications and same job experience and skills as a 16-year-old who just got their driver's license. You're not taking my sense of self from me. I've been down that road. High-demand religions do this really well. Spirituality needs to stop doing it too. Each of us is born into this world with unique talents, gifts, personalities, interests, and we are meant to have a sense of self, a sense of individuality. We are meant to bring all of our individuality and uniqueness into the world. We're not meant to be mindless drones with no sense of self and desire for attachment or connection to others. We weren't meant to be that. You are special. You are unique. You are needed for exactly who you are as an individual. You do not need to lose your sense of self in order to experience a spiritual awakening. And in fact, from what I've seen, when people experience this, it's more of a tragedy than a gift. When you see a spiritual guru who is incapable of connecting with anyone with compassion, when you see an empty shell of a human with no personality, no love, nothing but emptiness, that's not something to aspire to. Ego death is a concept that can be good, but if we're not careful and take it to the extreme, it isn't good at all. Ego transcendence is a part of a spiritual awakening, but only when it leads to a sense of interconnectedness that involves compassion for others, understanding of the nature of suffering in the physical realm. When it compels you to reach out and help those who suffer, when you are no longer concerned with what other people think about you, when you come to know who you truly are on a soul level, when you no longer judge others by their physical appearance or financial status, when love is what drives your every motive, when you lift the head that hangs down, you feed the hungry, you clothe the naked, you mourn and grieve with others, when your focus turns outward instead of inward, when you use your gifts to bring joy to others rather than attention to yourself, that is ego transcendence. That is a part of a spiritual awakening. When ego transcendence enhances your connection and love for other people in your life, that's a positive thing. When you're no longer arguing and seeking to get your way in a relationship, when you're more concerned with their happiness and serving them than yourself, that's when you know it's a true spiritual awakening. I want to give you a perfect example of what a true spiritual awakening looks like. And the example I'm going to use is my husband, because he is the perfect example of what a true spiritual awakening looks like, and it is beautiful. He is so outwardly focused, it almost blows my mind, to the point that he will sacrifice his own comfort to help someone else. So I'm going to tell you five examples, okay? Five examples. Here we go. So there's a time we were living below the poverty line when our children were young. I think my husband was making like $24,000 a year, or something like that. It was the middle of winter, and we lived at almost 6,000 feet above sea level in the Rocky Mountains, and it was cold. So some days were like negative 12 degrees Fahrenheit outside. My husband's shoes had large holes in them, and when he would come home from work, his feet were ice cold and wet. And he would put his feet by the fire. Half of our house was actually heated with wood stoves. We did not have central heating in most of the house. Just the like main little kitchen bedroom area were heated by central heat, because the house had been a cabin that was built a long time ago. He refused to buy new shoes because he was trying to save that money to buy some presents for the kids for Christmas. And I realized it was probably only, you know, $90 or $100 that he would have spent on new shoes, because they were like, these were like church shoes, you know, very nice shoes. But that is a level of sacrifice to try to get your kids presents for Christmas. Here's number two. During this same time, there came a point where we literally had $12 cash to our name. We didn't even use a bank account because we couldn't afford to have it go in the hole and get bank charges. So we just had $12 cash. We went on a date that night. His mother was watching our children. And we went on a date that night with a gift card that someone had given us to Costa Vida. So we didn't obviously have to pay for it because we just used a gift card. And we were going to Walmart to pick up a couple groceries, whatever we could buy with our $12. And we're standing in line. We had a couple of items, not much. And he saw a woman in the line next to us. She was in old, worn, tattered clothes. Her children were dirty. Their hair was matted. Their clothing was worn. And she was buying a few grocery items, and she was counting out change, trying to pay for like milk, bread, cheese, just some basic necessities. And my husband was noticing this we were in the checkout stand next to her. She didn't have enough money. She was short. And my husband, without a second thought, walked over and handed her the last $12 we had to our name. And as we walked out, he was apologizing to me and asked if I was okay with what he had done. And I said she needed it more than we did. Okay, I'm going to move on to the next story. So my husband was driving on State Street, and he passed a bus stop. And he saw a man standing at the bus stop, and he was rubbing his bare hands together to try to keep them warm. So it was about 12 degrees Fahrenheit, so well below freezing. And this man is just standing at a bus stop. And where we live, there are no like little coverings or anything. If you're at a bus stop, it's literally a sign. There's nowhere to sit. There's nothing. It's just a sign on the side of the road. So he's standing out in the freezing temperatures, rubbing his hands together. And my husband pulls over and handed this man his brand new hiking and ski gloves without a second thought. The man was shocked and asked him if he was sure. And he said, yes, you need them more than I do. Okay, I'm going to move on to the next one. So my husband, near his office in the city, he noticed that there was a homeless camp under the freeway. And during a meeting, many of his coworkers were expressing disgust at these lowlifes that were living under the freeway there. And after hearing his coworkers' comments during his lunch, He went out and bought a bunch of boxes of pizza, breadsticks, drinks, whatever. And he drove to the freeway underpass where this homeless encampment was. And he passed out food to the people living there. He didn't just give them the food. He sat down and ate with them and talked with them and listened to their stories and spent his entire lunch hour among them. And the last story, my husband on another lunch break, he had planned this, that he really wanted to do this because he'd seen a lot of people standing on the side of the road when he was in the downtown area, seeing people holding signs asking for money. And so he had planned what he was going to do for his lunch break that day. So he's driving around on his lunch break trying to find someone who had a sign asking for money. And he came across this elderly woman standing in the median of a very busy road in the city. And she had a sign that was asking for money. And so he went and parked and walked into the median with her. And he'd made this sign that morning, and I don't remember exactly what it said, but it said something about we are all one and asking for support for this person. I don't remember the wording of it. The woman had only, so he talks to her. She'd only made about $5 in the past 2 or 3 hours. And my husband told her he would stay there until he made her double that amount. And she asked him why he would do this. And he said, because I care. And during the hour that he was there, she was given $15. And she tried to share half of the money with him. You judge these people, and it does bring tears to my eyes because this is what life is about. This woman, the people would judge for standing and begging for money, as they call it. And she tried to give half of her money to my husband. Of course, he said no, and he handed her more money of his own before he left. This is what a spiritual awakening is. He does not deny the reality of suffering. He does not blame people for their circumstances. He doesn't say, oh, they're homeless because they want to be, or they're homeless because they're alcoholics, or they're begging for money because they just want drugs. No, he does not blame them or judge them for their circumstances. He does not ignore them. His heart is wide open. His focus is outward. And you know what? He is spreading love in the world. He is doing what he can to reduce suffering, to bring a smile to someone's face, even if it's just for a moment. Think of what our world would be like if more people lived like this. So I could spend days on end telling you stories of things my husband has done just like this, because this is how he lives his life every single day. I can't tell you how many times he's handed a $100 bill to the worker at the drive-through window, has mowed a lawn or shoveled the sidewalks of elderly people, or all kinds of things. If your spiritual awakening doesn't include a life like this, you have not had a spiritual awakening at all. Ego death is not a thing. But ego transcendence is not about losing yourself. It is about turning your focus away from yourself. The solar plexus is where you find your sense of purpose in life, your courage, your confidence, your sense of self. The individual and unique soul purpose that you have is a critical component to your well-being and your existence in this world. Do not let anyone tell you that your sense of self and your unique expression of your soul has to die in order for you to be spiritual. Your unique soul expression is needed. The world needs you just as you are. You cannot shut down the solar plexus and believe that you don't need confidence, self-esteem, or a sense of self. You cannot shut down connection with other human beings or attachment to those that you love. You don't shut down your compassion for others. The solar plexus is a healthy part of who you are, and the confidence and sense of self it provides is necessary for you and the world around you. What ego transcendence means is the loss of selfishness, the loss of self-centeredness. the loss of being self-conscious, judging other people. Those aspects are excesses from an unbalanced solar plexus, from an unhealthy ego. When the solar plexus is balanced and your ego is in a healthy state, your sense of self is healthy and balanced. That's when you no longer seek attention, think that you need to always be right. You're not judging other people. You can let go and love others. When you can let go of the self-centered nature, that's when your heart chakra lights up and your focus turns outward. That's when you begin to live out of heart-centered consciousness. The moral of the story? Do not seek to lose your sense of self. Seek to lose the self-centeredness and foster love and compassion for others. I hope you have enjoyed this. I appreciate the time that you spend with me, and I hope to see you next time.